On today's episode of the Just Beat Ohio State podcast, we will be welcoming Hunter Dickinson onto the show, the four-star Michigan basketball commit from the 2020 class. We will also be answering your voicemail questions, and lastly, we will be discussing our Michigan basketball starting lineup predictions and throwing out some unpopular opinions. Let's get right into it.
Yep. And we back.
Welcome to the first episode of the Just Beat Ohio State podcast, unofficially presented by DoorDash. I'm Ben Cooper, and alongside me today is Jacob, who runs the UM vs. Everyone Twitter account, and Max, who runs the Wolverine Corner Twitter account. How are you doing today, boys?
I'm doing pretty good, just chilling, quarantine, bored as crap.
Yeah, man, I'm doing good over here, Ben. Quarantine's rough for everyone right now. That's why we started this podcast, give us something to do, and hopefully everyone enjoys it.
Yeah, same. I mean, I feel like pretty much everyone on Earth right now is pretty bored, but Max, do you want to tell the listeners how this podcast came to be?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're all in a group chat together. There's a big Michigan group chat on Twitter. Please don't DM me asking to get into that. I get like 35 of those a day, and I just have to tell everyone, like, we're full. I can't let everyone in. So we're all in a group chat together. I think it was Ben's idea. He came to me and Jacob and asked if we wanted to do a podcast. We said, hey, man, why not? I've been wanting to do one for a couple years now. I think this podcast is going to be good. I think we're going to do a good job of just representing Michigan Twitter. We're going to have a lot of guests on here from Michigan Twitter. We're going to have athletes on here. Honestly, who knows at this point, but I do want to get kind of, a lot of people that you guys know, on Michigan Twitter. We're going to have them on here so you can get to know them even better. You can kind of put a voice to, you know, to their name and everything. And I just think it's going to be good. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Let's just jump right into it. What are you guys' thoughts on the recent decisions by Josh Christopher and Isaiah Todd?
We got kind of played, if I'm being honest. I know they're kids and they're doing what's best, but, you know, I mean, they were kind of – Christopher especially was sort of teasing everyone on Twitter. You know, every sign pointed to him coming to Michigan, everything about it. I mean, was like all but one crystal ball said he was coming to Michigan.
Yeah.
Then he goes to Arizona State instead. Isaiah Todd commits to Michigan. Then, like, what, 12 hours after Christopher commits to Arizona State, he decommits and he's called the decision to go to the G League. A no-brainer, which means that's probably been his mindset ever since he committed, air quotes, to Michigan. So, I mean, what can you do? You can't really do anything, but, you know, I was really optimistic about the future of the team, but I mean, I'm still optimistic, but I think it would have been great to have them.
For sure. I think it's disappointing, but I think what we saw, that was just your classic case of clout chasing. Look, Michigan has a giant fan base. They are dedicated. They're crazy a lot of the time. But you know, I think players like Josh Christopher, he absolutely ate it up. He loved the attention. I do think that he had probably made up his mind for quite a while that he was going to Arizona State. I know he tweeted a couple days ago that he had made up his mind maybe like the week before. But I know Ant Wright on Twitter, he also said that his guy was confident since last fall that that's where he was going, you know, he was going to be going to Arizona State. So, you know, to drag it out for months and months and months and get yourself thousands of followers, I think it was a good case of clout chasing, and it was definitely disappointing. Losing Isaiah Todd was tough, but I don't think, as far as next year's roster goes, not having Josh Christopher on, it's going to hurt a lot more than not having Todd on it. We were pretty jam-packed at the power forward position anyways. Livers is probably going to come back. That's my guess. We got Brandon Johns. We're going to have Terrence Williams, who can kind of play that 3-4 position next year. So losing Todd doesn't hurt as much as Christopher, but we definitely got finessed a little bit, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was definitely in the same boat, because considering, I think one of the worst parts about it is just that no one is really doing anything, so there's such a spotlight on it, and it was supposed to be like this big thing. Everyone, you know, is bored at home, and this is going to like make their quarantine. But then He doesn't announce it till 11:24 p.m. Eastern Standard, and then you see the video, and Twitter blows up, and then the following days he's tweeting stuff out, like adding Michigan, stuff like that. And yeah, I think he's an 18-year-old kid. Social media is really can be a crazy place. A lot of kids want the attention, and I think he was just simply trying to milk his decision as much as possible. I mean, I wish him the best, but yeah.
Were you guys – did you guys all watch that live when he put that on Instagram? Jacob, did you watch that live?
Watch what?
The his commitment video when he put it live on Instagram.
I saw it on Twitter, and I think it was Ryan Sane. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. Like, he tweeted, it was like, Josh Christopher commits to Arizona State. My heart just kind of sunk. And I click on the video, and I just skip right to the commitment part. Then it shows ASU, and I'm like, oh,
God. I was over all day for this. Yeah, I was over at my dad's house, and my dad follows Michigan and everything. And I've been hyping up Josh Christopher. I try to talk sports to my dad, obviously, as much as possible. And he doesn't follow the recruiting as much as I do. And I was hyping it up. And I remember I was just sitting on the couch, and once I saw, because there was all the rumors that he was going to announce at 8:24, Pacific time for Kobe and everything. And I remember when it loaded on the Instagram page, I had basically told my dad that it was a lock. Like, he was coming to Michigan, and we watched the video together, and like I just laughed. I honestly laughed. Like, I was kind of pissed. I was kind of speechless, but I could not stop laughing, because I just realized in the moment like how bad it felt like Michigan got played.
Yeah. I was because it was late. I was playing Warzone with some friends and got the notification. I was like just not even paying attention to the game. Swiping on Instagram, just waiting for it. Came up, can't even say to this day I've actually watched the whole video, just skipped to the end. And yeah, my heart sunk, kind of ruined my whole day. I mean, obviously we're still gonna have a great team, but I mean, let's not lie to ourselves, he would have been a great addition to the team. And when I woke up the next day, the news hit that Isaiah Tad was not going to be coming to Ann Arbor, and that one hurt too.
Absolutely, yep.
So now, without further ado, let's jump right into our interview with our very special first guest, Hunter Dickinson.
We are very pleased to welcome Hunter Dickinson onto the podcast today. If you don't know much about Hunter, he is a 7'2" center, and he is Michigan's top-ranked recruit in the 2020 class. First off, thank you, Hunter. Welcome on. How are you getting through quarantine, handling the pandemic, stuff like that? You hanging in there?
Just a lot of workouts, homework, and video games, probably doing a little bit of Netflix, too.
Have you been able to get out and play any basketball during the pandemic?
I'm able to play a little bit of basketball. There's a gym near my house that I'll use every chance I get, really, to be able to shoot and just work on my shot and stuff like that.
All right, Hunter. What does a quarantine day in the life look like for you?
I'll sleep in a little bit. Because I'll probably sleep in so I get a little more sleep than I do during the school week. So I'll probably wake up around 10:30, 11-ish, and then go, do some homework till about 2-3. Get on the, probably either get a workout in at 4, or get on the game and then work out, and then go back, work out again at like 8 or 9, and then just have some eating in there in between and stuff like that.
For the listeners who don't know much about you, what players would you say you model your game after?
Probably, if it was one player, I think it would be Jokic. I don't really model my game after him, but I just think we play like his kind of versatility within like being able to run the offense, I think, is something that's really similar to me.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Hunter, I wanted to talk about recruiting rankings. What do you think about them? Do you pay attention to them? Does it motivate you? During the whole recruiting process, did you really care where you were ranked?
No. I mean, I get the notifications on social media. I mean, at first, like when you're younger, you do. Like when you're a freshman and sophomore, it's kind of just fun because, that's what's cool. But as you get older, you kind of tend to see like what they're really about, and it's not really about skill. The older you get, it's more about potential and just what they think you'll become, really. And so most people tend, like most basketball players, tend not to really care about him. Well, we'll actually even make our own rankings among people. I remember at the Skills Academy, we were making our own rankings, and that was pretty fun.
What is your relationship with some of the other players coming in the 2020 recruiting class?
Well, obviously, me and T have known each other most of our lives through basketball. Me and Zeb and Jace are pretty cool. I know Zeb, we played against each other down in Florida. Jace, we talk every day pretty much. And then Mike Smith, we're all in the same group chat. We were just playing Call of Duty with him yesterday. So we're pretty cool. Everybody's pretty cool with each other. I kind of like how the chemistry is right now with the guys.
Hunter, I wanted to ask you, back in January, you got the chance to play Evan Mobley. Mm-hmm. I remember that's when a lot of the, you know, that was about a month after you committed. That was the first kind of thing a lot of Michigan fans saw from you. They saw that you actually outplayed him in that game, and then they saw your comments after the game where you basically were like, hey man, I feel like I'm better. I just wanted to know, what was it like playing up against, you know, the number one prospect in the class? And do you feel like you were a little bit underranked? Do you feel like you're every bit as good as him?
So the first time I played him, we played, it was like I think it was 2 years ago. We played in Vegas. It was like 11 o'clock our time. It was like 2 a.m. really, like 2 a.m. back home. And so like, he kind of got me there. So I was pretty motivated to play the next game because I feel like I let him have one. And then, and that wasn't really my first time playing the number one player. I'm used to playing really good bigs, especially on the UIBL circuit. So I just wanted to go in there and do better than I did last year at Hoop Hall, because I feel like I had a really bad performance last year. And so I just wanted to come in, and I knew if I played well, my team would win. And so that's all I tried to do, really.
Even though you haven't began your freshman year yet, what are your thoughts on the Michigan fan base so far?
They're pretty wild. I mean, they're passionate about their sports, and that's fine with me. I mean, I'm passionate about my sports, so I hope that the fans are just as passionate as me.
I wanted to ask you a question about Terrence real quick. I read a quote from, it was actually from Greg Brown's dad, and he said something along the lines of, you know, if Terrence Williams was just a bit taller, he'd be the number one player in this class. You know, as one of the lower ranked players in the class, not a lot of Michigan fans know about him. So I was wondering if you could talk about his game, how skilled he is, what we can expect from Terrence Williams.
I mean, my man's still like 80 overall, I think.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, Terrence, like, ever since we were younger, he was always ranked really high. We were both ranked pretty high always when we were, like, 7th, 8th grade. Just because, I mean, if you wanted, like, he was, like, he played exactly like that. And he was always taller than everybody. He was, like, me and him, we weren't the same height. I was always, like, the tallest and, like, one of the tallest players in the country. But he was always pretty tall, too. And so, I mean, he's, like, 6'7" right now. And so, he was playing the four. And so, he used to get a lot of, I mean, like, yeah, people need to start. I guess Terrence is a little bit underrated because he's always been playing, like, the five at Gonzaga and stuff like that. And then also on TakeOver, it's, like, he's kind of like the shooter. But, I mean, my guy can play. He's pretty good. I saw that quote about Greg Brown's father saying that if he was like 6'9", he'd be the number one player in the country. I mean, she was probably right. If Terrence was like 6'9", he's moving, he can shoot. Like, he's one of the best shooters in the country. Probably be a little bit more bouncier too. So yeah, he'd probably be number one.
Which Big Ten center are you most looking forward to matching up next year with, and why?
Probably Luka, because that's my friend. We've known each other a while, since probably my 8th grade year. That's when I practiced with TakeOver, and he was, like, I was on TakeOver, but I was on the younger team, but I was able to practice with the 17s, and he was on there. So probably Luka. I mean, the other bigs, I'm trying to think. I don't think there's another one. Probably Kofi from Illinois. I like playing against him. Those are probably the two that come to mind.
Yeah. I actually had two questions here. The first one, I just wanted to talk to you just briefly about, you know, the whole Isaiah Todd and, you know, Josh Christopher thing. Obviously, Christopher was never a member of the class, so I'm not sure if you ever expected that or not. But was it kind of a bummer to see Todd, decommit and then decide to go pro?
It was a bummer at first. But then, you know, you kind of got to realize that he's just trying to do what's best for him. I mean, it would be pretty hard for any of us to turn down that kind of deal given the circumstances. So, I mean, I don't hold it against him at all. He's just trying to do what's best for him.
And then I also wanted to ask, what is the absolute worst thing about being 7'2"?
I can deal with the people staring at me. It definitely hurts your head because it comes at the worst times usually.
Gotcha.
All right, Hunter, we have a quick segment of some rapid-fire questions we wanted to ask you. Are you ready to go?
Yeah.
What's your shoe size?
17.
MJ or LeBron?
MJ.
Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Ooh. Favorite artist?
Light Show.
Favorite basketball shoe?
Kyrie 3.
Coke or Pepsi?
Pepsi products.
Okay. Favorite TV show?
Favorite TV show of all time? Prison Break.
If you could choose, what number would you want to wear for next season?
1 or 24.
What's your favorite brand of cereal?
S'mores.
Instagram or Twitter?
Instagram.
Chipotle or Qdoba?
Oh, Qdoba.
Favorite pregame song?
Favorite pregame song? Probably East of the River.
And this is a most requested question. Do you eat mac and cheese with a spoon or a fork?
Oh, fork.
So I did see that Terrence was pretty adamant the other night during that MJ doc that, you know, LeBron was LeBron's the GOAT. Did you guys argue about that at all?
I don't want to argue with those kind of people. They just don't make any sense.
I apologize, I'm one of those people, but you know.
All right, Hunter. Like I said, we were going to try to get you in and out of here as quickly as possible. We really do appreciate you stopping in. We can do that. You can hop back on with us at any time. I really appreciate it. Stay safe. We can't wait to see you in Ann Arbor, and just thanks again.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Yep, no problem. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much to Hunter Dickinson for coming on the pod. I hope you all enjoyed that interview. Now we are going to move into voicemail questions. Max, aka Wolverine Corner, tweeted out a number yesterday where people could submit their questions via voicemail. So thank you to everyone who submitted questions. If you would like to submit one in the future, just keep an eye out for a tweet. Now, here is our first question.
Hey, this is Noah from Bryan, Ohio. And my question to you is, if you had to give a percent chance that Michigan beats Ohio State, what's the percent?
Thank you, Noah, for the submission. Jake, you can take this one first. What do you think?
Okay. To put it nicely, DoorDash will sponsor us before Michigan beats Ohio State in Columbus. They have not done that since the year 2000. I mean, people that are graduating high school now weren't even born then. Like, I think, like, FPI gave us, like, an 8% chance to do that. Divide that percentage by 8. I'll give them like a 1% chance.
Max, what do you think?
We will be sponsored by DoorDash before that happens. I can guarantee that. I'm gonna go with him there. I'm a pretty optimistic fan. You guys all know that. But we're going into Columbus. They have Justin Fields. We have a first-year quarterback. We have lost by about 1,000 the last two times we've played them. I'm going to give our chances about a negative 6% chance that we're going to go into Columbus next year and beat them.
I would honestly say, like, obviously, I'm still in high school, can't remember, or actually in my lifetime, they've never beaten Ohio State in Columbus, and I don't think that's going to change next year, but I'm gonna give a real answer. I think it's going to be about a 8% chance. 8% chance we go into Columbus. Dylan McCaffrey is going to have to put on the game of his life.
Hey, that's completely possible. All right, let's move into the next question.
It's LeBron from Hudsonville, Michigan. I'm just calling wondering, is Juwan going to teach defense next year? Because this year's defense was awful. Watching the Iowa game might have been the most frustrating thing I've ever done. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, LeBron, for the submission. Great name, by the way. Max, you want to take this one first?
For sure. LeBron, you are right. That game against Iowa was one of the most pitiful defensive performances I've ever seen. I think Michigan fans underestimated how much losing Luke Yaklich would hurt this year. You know, we basically had a whole new staff come in outside of, Saadi Washington, and the defense really hurt. With that said, Juwan is clearly an offensive coach. Michigan had a really, really, really good offense this year. They led the Big Ten in shooting percentage. Even on games where they couldn't score, it seemed like every single game they got wide open looks. Juwan is an offensive guy. His offense translated to the college game extremely well. Defense, not so much. With that said, going forward into next season, you'll be in year two. Michigan will have all the assistant coaches back. They should have three returning starters back. I would be shocked if they did not have a better defensive team next year. And I think the thing that was most frustrating this year was when you broke Michigan's team down individually, everybody was good defenders. You know, Xavier Simpson was supposed to be a good defender. Eli Brooks, good defender. Franz Wagner, good defender. Teske was a great defender last year. Livers, in my opinion, has always been a plus defender. So why they didn't come together and why weren't they a good defensive team this year, I have no idea, but I would definitely expect it to be better next year. Jacob, what are your thoughts?
Well, with Juwan's coaching style, I don't think you'll ever see like the Yaklich-type defense that we had under Beilein, because you know, Juwan teaches an NBA style, and in the NBA, if you ever watch the NBA, you can tell that offense is valued a whole lot more over defense. So I think you'll see what you'll have in the future is a lot of offensively centered teams, but defense will kind of take a back seat to that unless Juwan hires another type of guy to teach defense like Yaklich.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think when you go from Beilein and Yaklich and then you just go straight to Juwan Howard, it's really like a tough bar for an NBA, a guy who's only ever dealt with the NBA in terms of coaching to deal with. I think it's a lot different, as you guys were both saying, just the NBA versus college. And I think it takes time to adjust, honestly. I think he's ever going to reach the level of Yaklich? Probably not, but I definitely see improvement in the future. And I think, honestly, even though there's, even with the players we've lost, I think our defense will improve for next season. Now moving into our third question.
Hey, my name is Brooks. I'm from Ohio, and I was just curious how you all came to be Michigan fans. Thanks.
Thanks, Brooks from Ohio, for the submission. I'll take this one first. I have lived in Ann Arbor my entire life, and both my parents went to the University of Michigan. I grew up always liking sports. They were always a part of my life. It was always a part of my life, and yeah, I just have kind of been a Michigan fan my whole life. Started going to games, especially basketball games, like at a very young age, probably like 7 or 8, and I've just been a really big fan since then. Jacob, you want to take this one next?
Well, I was born like 10 miles from the big house. I was right next to Eastern Michigan, actually. But my dad went to Michigan. My mom went elsewhere. She was in a military family. She was from like everywhere. But I was just born here. Basically, I didn't really have much of a choice. I mean, being a Michigan fan even started painful because my first memory ever of Michigan, like at all, was I believe Rich Rod's last football game, watching that on television, they got destroyed by Mississippi State. So it's been a long, painful journey, but I'm still there. I'm just waiting for a championship, and I know it will eventually come.
For sure. And I don't have the Michigan ties that the other two guys here have. I'm also a little bit older. Basically, I was born in Phoenix, Arizona. Then I lived in the Ozarks down in Missouri for a long time. And then me and my dad moved back up here to Toledo, Ohio. So that's where I live now. I remember, so I was in elementary school. And, you know, before I even started really liking sports, everybody was kind of an Ohio State or a Michigan fan. And I didn't know which one to pick. So I kind of picked Michigan just to kind of go against some of my friends. And then as I got older, started obviously liking sports, just fell in love with the university, the traditions. Obviously, Toledo, we're just an hour south of Ann Arbor, so we're much closer than, you know, even we are to Columbus. So it kind of just started as a bandwagon pick for me when I was really young. And then obviously when I got older, just fell in love with it. And that's kind of how I became a Michigan fan. Thank you for that question. We will move into our last question now. Question four.
I'm Sean from Western Pennsylvania, and I wanted to know, what's your favorite Michigan game you've been to in person?
Thanks, Sean, for submitting the question. I have like probably two games that are pretty close together with football. One would be Michigan versus Wisconsin. This was 2016. This was Harbaugh's first top 10 win ever. It was a pretty defensive game, I would have to say, but I mean, that was about as loud as I've ever heard Michigan Stadium when Jordan Lewis made his ridiculous, like, backhanded interception. That was a moment to remember. And I went to Michigan State last year, and that was it was pretty fun to see them blow out Michigan State like it was nothing. So those two would be my favorites.
Yeah, so
mine is not really football related, but 2018, I was at the Loyola Chicago versus Michigan game. It was a really great game. I don't know if it was just like the trip was overall a good time. That's why I remember it so fondly. But yeah, that's just probably my favorite game I've ever been to.
What about mine is definitely the it was in 2013, the Michigan Ohio State basketball game. It was the second meeting between those two teams that year. Ohio State beat them the first game. And I went to the game with two of my Ohio State buddies, and they were just giving me crap the whole game because Michigan was losing most of the game. And if you remember that game, Tim Hardaway Jr. in the second half of that game just absolutely went off. He hit like six threes in that game. It was a really, really fun game. Admittedly, I haven't been to very many football games, so I don't have a lot of good football memories. But I've been to 100 basketball games before, and that one definitely sticks out. That was the game where Aaron Kraft took the last shot in regulation and in overtime. I think Burke blocked him on one of them. Hardaway blocked him on another one. And it was just, it's where that meme where Aaron Kraft was just laying on the floor at Chrysler. Yeah. And that's definitely my favorite Michigan game I've ever been to.
All right. That is all the submission questions we have. Now, assuming that Livers stays, how do you guys see the Michigan basketball starting lineup looking to begin next season? I can start off with this one if you want. I think Mike Smith at the one, Brooks at the two, I'd say Franz at the three, Livers at the four, and I actually think Davis is going to get the start to begin the year. I don't see it going, like, by the time March comes, or even 2021, I don't see Davis remaining the starter, but I think to begin the year, he'll get the start over Dickinson. What do you think, Jacob?
I definitely agree. I mean, the starting five is pretty solid to me. I mean, like you said, it was Smith, Brooks, Livers, Franz, and then Davis to start. And yeah, I definitely think as the year also goes on, Hunter Dickinson will definitely get more playing time. He'll prove himself as a force down low and defensively. But I'm excited for the starting five now. Next year, it's going to be a good team.
Yeah, I disagree with you guys at that center position. I don't think Austin Davis was brought back to start at the five. I just don't think that that's his role on the team. I think he's going to play a similar role to what he played last year. I think he was brought back to help Hunter Dickinson along the way, help develop him, and more importantly, to just be that senior leader that Michigan's going to need next season. Hunter Dickinson is clearly the more talented big man, even though he will be a true freshman. He's 7'2". He played, you know, against incredible competition in high school. He's got a college-ready body, and I just think he's more skilled than Davis. And I just believe that he'll be given the nod to start off the season at center. Davis will play a similar role to last season, and Dickinson I think is going to embrace it. I think he's going to be one heck of a player, and I think we're going to see a lot of that in his freshman year.
I think we all can agree that Dickinson is the overall more talented player, but just in my opinion, I think, especially with all the COVID-19 stuff that's going on, we don't know how much they're going to get to practice in the near future. So I personally believe Davis would get the nod early on in the year.
And as far as the rest of the lineup goes, just like you guys said, I think it's pretty obvious right now. The point guard position looks like it's going to be Mike Smith. I'd be shocked if anybody else starts there. The only other scenario I could see would possibly be if they want to play Franz at the two and Brooks at the one, but I don't see that happening. So
yeah.
I think, you know, Smith at the one, that means Brooks is going to play the two, which he did a great job this year at. Very underrated this year. I think Eli Brooks, I think, is extremely underappreciated by most of the Michigan fan base. He has been rock solid for 3 years now. Yes, he's had shooting inconsistencies, but when he's on the floor, always plays good defense, always gets you into the offense, and is a pretty good passer as well. So Eli Brooks should thrive there next year. I don't see them getting a grad transfer or anything else. So I believe Brooks will start at the two. And then obviously Livers and Franz at the three and four. So I don't think, you know, with Josh Christopher and Isaiah Todd not being part of this team, I think it makes the lineup for next season a lot more obvious.
Yeah, I honestly completely agree. Moving away from basketball, though, for a second, do you guys think that Michigan should go after transfer QB JT Daniels? Max, you want to start us off?
Yeah, so no, they should not. We have so much talent in that quarterback room. There are a lot of people on Twitter. This has been a good argument over the last, you know, couple weeks about whether to bring in a transfer quarterback. And then once JT Daniels, you know, announced that he was going to transfer, Michigan fans, obviously a lot of them wanted him. I get the idea of wanting more talent in the quarterback room. I get it, but it seems unnecessary. And especially to a quarterback room that has two guys, you know, chomping at the bit to get their opportunity. I think bringing in a grad transfer at this point would not be good for the morale of the team. At some point, Harbaugh, you got to play one of your recruits. And I think this year is that year. I think Milton and McCaffrey both have incredibly high ceilings. I have no idea which one of them is going to start next year, but I think bringing in a grad transfer or bringing in a transfer of any kind would just be extremely unnecessary.
I'd have to say, Max, that I disagree. I don't think it's a smart decision for him just because obviously we have so much talent that, I mean, it's obviously a big question, even if he start at all. But I think the more talent's the better in the quarterback room. I think if he's the best quarterback out of the three, then I'd rather have him than any of the other two. But that's just my opinion. Jacob, what do you think?
No. No. I've Dylan McCaffrey and Joe Milton have waited patiently for a chance to start. Now they do have that chance, and to just disrupt that, like, there's the team chemistry part. Like, if, like, JT Daniels comes in and just automatically gets the job, I'd imagine possibly both McCaffrey and Milton transfer. I would have the thought that if McCaffrey wins the job, Milton's going to transfer. And if Milton wins the job, McCaffrey will transfer. If Daniels comes in and does that, we'll see them, both of them leave possibly. Milton would probably be less likely, but I wouldn't rule it out. Just like, I just think we should just leave the quarterback room alone and just let the best two of McCaffrey and Milton win the job. And
so yeah. I'm not saying that JT Daniels is better than them, but let's say he was, like, if he was the best out of the best quarterback out of the three, you guys still wouldn't want him.
Well, listen, I understand what you're saying, but there's also going to be that thing where do you trust the coaches to bring in a five-star transfer and to play the best guy? You know, it when a player like that transfers in, he's usually given an advantage to start. And I'm not going to say I trust Harbaugh to make the right move. You know, if he comes in, maybe he plays Daniels instead of somebody who's more deserving. So I just – the whole thing – I think the cons outweigh the pros by a lot, in my opinion.
All right. You got something, Jacob?
Yeah, but just one more thing. I don't even see the possibility of JT Daniels coming here. I don't even think that's a real possibility because, again, there's two guys already battling here. He's throwing himself into that battle and making it a three-man battle. For a guy who's a five-star, he's probably going to want to go to a place where the job is probably going to be handed to him. That's not going to happen at Michigan. It just doesn't make sense for either party to me.
Listen, Jacob, anything is possible on Michigan Twitter if we've learned anything. So, you know, we're going to start the rumors. We're going to start the rumblings because that's what we do.
Yeah. So now we're going to move on to our last segment, unpopular opinions. Jacob, you want to start us off?
Yes. All right. So we all know how much scrutiny Jim Harbaugh gets for underperforming in big games, you know, consistently loses them. Personally, I think Don Brown is worse in these games than Harbaugh does because, like, if we've watched recently, in the last 2 years against Ohio State, he has given up 62 points and 56 points. That's just, like, unfathomable to me. Just, like, you can't do that. That's not – the defense, Harbaugh basically leaves the defense alone for Don Brown. And, like, whenever they play these good offenses, they exploit this over-aggressiveness against us. And they kill us, essentially. And that's – I just don't think his style is ever going to win games against these good teams, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'll say this, Jacob. It's funny, too, because, you know, we might have given up less points, you know, the second time around, but Don Brown's defense against Ohio State was worse in 2019 than it was in 2018, and I don't think any Michigan fan would have thought that was possible. It makes no sense. I think Ohio State had a couple – I think they had a special team touchdown and maybe a defensive touchdown in 2018. Yeah. So the defense was actually worse in 19 against Ohio State. And I'm sure Don Brown's, you know, I'm sure he's not sleeping a lot thinking about those two games.
Yeah, I think there's like this over-aggressive way of coaching. That's why he's so successful when he goes against teams that Michigan has more talent. But it's so clear when we play against teams with even equal or more talent than us that we just can't play with them. It doesn't work. Any well-coached team with talent, it's not going to be effective.
And football is continuing to evolve as well. Offense is just becoming more prevalent in college football. Teams are throwing it more. Teams are spreading it out more than ever before. And, you know, he's not at Boston College anymore. You can't sit there in a press man-to-man and do that every game when you're playing, you know, five-star receivers from Ohio State and Penn State. It just doesn't work. Offenses know how to exploit those mismatches. And, of course, I'm not saying sit back in a zone 100% of the game, right? You got to mix it up. We all know that. But when Don Brown's running 60, 70, 80% man-to-man in a game, that just doesn't work against elite competition, you know, in today's college football.
All right. Max, you want to go with your unpopular opinion?
Sure. So I'm going to throw this out here. I'm sure plenty of people are going to disagree with me, but I think Michigan basketball, I think they're better off next year without Isaiah Todd and Josh Christopher. And there's one major reason why I say that. There's obviously going to be less talent on Michigan's team next year. But we all talked to somebody in the program, and that person said, and this is an exact quote, he said that he knows those two guys, and those two guys are not guys you want to be on a team with. So I'm not sure if he was just salty at the time when he made that comment, or if it was, you know, if it was brutally honest. I think it was brutally honest, but having two, you know, self-centered guys, and I know that's a little harsh to call them self-centered, but I think those stars can have a little bit of that personality. This person thought that the team would be better off without them, and I support that. I think when you get down into March, there's a lot of talented teams in college basketball. You know, what are the teams that make a run? They are the teams that are together and the teams that are clicking at the right time. And players like that can prevent a team from being together. I have an example of this, and I don't have any firsthand knowledge of this, but I felt like Jordan Poole in his second year, in his sophomore year, from the comments that his dad made when he declared for the draft, it sounded like Jordan Poole just had his mind set on the draft for the last 3 months of that season. I think it showed on the floor. I think Jordan Poole played a lot of iso ball. I don't think he played much defense, and I think that it hurt Michigan that season. And I just think when you have players that can ruin the morale of a team, or maybe not even ruin, but just hurt it a little bit, you know, that outweighs the talent, in my opinion.
Yeah, I honestly completely agree with that opinion, even though obviously I can already see a lot of people not. I think a perfect example is Duke from 2019, last year, I guess, is the easier way of saying it. But when you have so many young star players that have just, I don't know, the media is all over their game. Obviously, Michigan probably would have generated a lot more money, probably would have been on ESPN a lot more if they had JC and Isaiah Todd. But if I'm being honest, that doesn't really concern me. I think come March, the more experienced teams would have beat us, because we'd have two 18-year-old kids running the show for us.
And I love that Michigan State, Duke, or I guess you were talking about Duke, but I want to bring up how Michigan State beat them year in the tournament. Michigan State did not have the talent that Duke had. We all know that. But what Michigan State did have is they had experience and they had elite role players. People forget how good Matt McQuaid was for that team, how good Kenny Goins was for that team, Nick Ward, Xavier Tillman. They were so together. They clicked at the right time. That team wasn't loaded with five-star talent. To go in and beat Zion and, you know, Cam Reddish and RJ Barrett, it just shows you that maybe Duke wasn't together as a team. And in March, a team with experience and a team with elite role players, that's really what you want to make a run. And talent's great. I'm not arguing that talent's not great, but you don't want to sacrifice the togetherness and the team morale for talent, in my opinion.
What do you think about that, Jacob? Or you have anything else to add?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think talent is obviously an extremely vital part. If you want to win games, you need to have talent, but chemistry is also just as important as talent. I think, like, when to compare Michigan to that Duke team, that's just kind of because Duke had the top three prospects from that previous high school's class going into the same team. And just, like, I mean, that's a lot of, I mean, that's a ton of talent, obviously.
Yeah, but if
it it was like Fab Five-esque, it was like comparable to it.
But if next year's team, if next year's team had Christopher and Todd, you're looking at a team with, I mean, Todd, Christopher, who are lottery picks, plus, you know, Franz Wagner, who could, you know, Franz and Livers, who could both be first round caliber picks next year. I mean, I think that team would have been absolutely stacked with talent.
Yeah, but I'm like, the chemistry, what MSU used to beat Duke again was its chemistry and its coaching. Kenny Goins was a former walk-on.
Yep,
and he hits the game-winning shot over Zion, who is the clear-cut number one pick. Like, it was like the, well, that's like a nice story. Like, yeah. Again, developing players is, again, important. And all of these players that Michigan is getting, even without Christopher and Todd, these are players that I think they are going to hang on for at least 2 years. None of them are going to be one and done unless they exceed expectations, in my opinion. So I think with the talent Juwan is getting, and it'll show if he can develop guys. It's an extremely the future of Michigan basketball is going to be very bright.
Yeah, and I want to comment on that too about not having any one and dones in this class. Michigan has extremely good talented players in this class, and they have three top 80 players, but none of those three players, at least in my mind, would even have remotely of a chance to go, you know, to be a one and done type player. I mean, I guess your best bet would probably be Hunter Dickinson, and that seems extremely unlikely. Yeah. Zeb is going to get kind of worked into the rotation. I don't think he's going to get big time minutes this year. And then Terrence Williams is an incredible and intriguing prospect, but he's that tweener, right? He's that 3-4 combo that those people don't get drafted high very often. Livers is kind of battling that right now. I think if Livers was 6'9", or if Livers was 6', you know, 5 and a shooting guard, he would be drafted much higher. But the fact that he's kind of that in between 3 and 4 position, is he a 4 at the next level? Is he a 3 at the next level? I think that's the reason that we're probably going to see Livers back, and I think that's the reason that we're going to see Terrence Williams here for at least 3 seasons.
All right. Now that you guys have gone, I'm going to share my unpopular opinion. I think Shea Patterson was overly criticized and honestly had an underrated career at Michigan. Before I say this.
Come on, man.
Did he reach expectations? Obviously not. Obviously, the 5-star coming in to Michigan, people thought he was going to be a Heisman candidate. He wasn't that. But what I'm hearing nowadays is, I don't know. I just don't see the criticism that he's getting is deserved. And I don't know. What do you guys think?
Listen, we are a pro Shea Patterson podcast because we are a pro all Michigan athletes podcast. But come on, man. He underperformed. I thought he played maybe 5 good games in his career, about 10 average games, and about, you know, the rest of them were probably below average. The guy could not hit a receiver in stride this season. Against Alabama, he had like 8 overthrows. That was his last chance at Michigan, you know, to make a name for himself, to have a signature win, to help boost his NFL, you know, draftability. And that's the performance we got from him. And I think, as harsh as this sounds, that's going to be the lasting memory of Shea Patterson to a lot of Michigan fans. And I think in 4, 5, 6 years, I think we're going to look back at Shea Patterson kind of like in the same, you know, ways we look back at Wilton Spate. Kind of like, well, he was kind of good sometimes. So I think that the criticism of him is probably, you know, deserved.
Well, I mean, I like how you say, though, 4 or 5 years from now, Wilton Spate comparison, because honestly, from what I've heard recently, and just obviously last winter and last fall, I heard a lot worse criticisms. That's what I was more addressing. I think a Wilton Spate comparison a few years down the line will be a good one. I think he's being so criticized, especially last year, just because simply because of the expectations of the Michigan football program and the expectations of a 5-star.
And I think that Harbaugh is now going into year 6, and I think that most people would agree, and maybe you guys can chime in and tell me if you agree, that I think Shea Patterson's the 3rd best quarterback he's had since he's been here, and he's only been here for 5 years. So for a 5-star transfer to come in and be the 3rd best quarterback he's had, I mean, I would only put him ahead of probably Okorn and Peters. I think Rudock and Spate would probably be ahead of him.
I'd say that I think Rudock is a better quarterback at Michigan than Shea Patterson. I think if you put Spate in the in switching his offensive coordinator senior year, I think that's very underrated about how difficult that is. I think you saw flashes this year, and also you saw teams put up 35, Wisconsin put up 35, Bama put up 35. I don't even want
to. Ohio State put up a million.
Yeah, damn near 1,000. I think that's very difficult for a quarterback to respond to. I think when your defense just can't get stops, it's hard and it makes you rush. But
this is an extremely unfair comparison. I'm probably going to get shit about this, but It didn't affect Joe Burrow that his defense gave up like 40 a game, but I guess that is an unfair comparison to compare Shea to Joe Burrow. But hey, here we are.
If you're a five-star quarterback, I don't care how bad your defense is. Against Ohio State and Alabama, he threw under 50% completion. That's just like, I don't care who you're playing. You got to complete more passes than
In his defense, everyone did forget how to catch the ball in the second half of the Ohio State game.
In Alabama, he was straight missing every single person. And his completion percentage against Bama was better than against Ohio State.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He threw for over 300 yards against Ohio State, but he went 18 for 43. Just like again, one of the things about Michigan, you are partially remembered for how you play against Ohio State. Shea was not good against Ohio State at all.
Sure.
Like, I mean, when he played, like in 2018, he threw 58.8% for 187 yards. So it's just like...
Well, remember, Shea Patterson didn't have a 300-yard game until, like, you know, four games left in his career, basically. So, and then he happened to throw, like, three straight 300-yard games.
Until Michigan State threw 384 against MSU.
Which was beautiful that he broke that streak against them, by the way.
That's nice. That
was fantastic.
But, like, if you are a starting quarterback from Michigan, you just got to be better than that.
It's actually crazy, and I know we're going way off topic here, but I mean, when you break down the list of quarterbacks that we have had under Jim Harbaugh, I mean, you know, Rudock, Spate, O'Korn, Peters, Shea, it's like, when are we going to get that guy, right? When are we going to get the dude that comes in here and is really, really elite? I hope that guy is in the quarterback room this year, and but this quarterback list, I don't think very many people expected it to be this bad, you know, 5 years into the Harbaugh era. This is bad.
The thing I think about is, I don't remember when he signed, but I know it was quite a bit ago. McCarthy signed. Yeah. Kid is in my grade. And I think he was like 14 when he signed. I think he was in middle school, 13 or something like that. And people were already hyped for him. Like, that is ridiculous. Like, you have a five-star as your quarterback, like at the time, and we're hyping up a 13-year-old.
Yeah. Speaking of McCarthy, one thing that really sticks out about him, and again, I'm not trying to throw Shea Patterson shade here, but it's probably going to come out like that. Again, this is a pro Shea Patterson podcast, but it just seems like JJ McCarthy has that incredible work ethic, and I kind of almost want to compare it to like Joe Burrow. Like, Joe Burrow kept talking about the fucking hours of work that he put in like over the summer, and I just feel like JJ McCarthy has that just killer work ethic, and I don't know if Shea had that. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I have no inside knowledge on that whatsoever. But you know, there's been plenty of articles posted by certain people that you can go read if you want to read up on Shea's supposed lack of work ethic that I cannot confirm or deny.
All right.
Is that it?
I think that's our last segment. Yeah.
That's it. Hey, that was a day. Yeah.
Round one done.
Solid first podcast, I hope.
So the question brings episode one to a close. Thank you guys for listening to the first episode of the Just Beat Ohio State podcast. We'd appreciate it if you guys subscribed for new episodes in the near future. If you guys have made it to this point, comment just the beginning on any of our Twitters so we can see who the real supporters are. Shout out to our editor, Quentin. His Twitter, along with all of ours, will be linked in the description below. If any of you guys have any guests you'd like to come on to the pod in the future, feel free to leave a comment or just DM any of us on Twitter. Stay tuned for new episodes in the future, and shout out to Hunter Dickinson for the outro song for this episode titled East of the River by Light Show. Thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there, and remember, just beat Ohio State.
Hey. Yeah, yeah, hey, yeah, hey, 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 hey. Came to get this money, and if I don't, then I'm not leaving. Changed to get this money for the better. Got my reason, gotta keep it with me. Got it on me now, like defense. I know they love you, then they hate you. That's the sequence. You just gotta believe that you can do it. That's the secret. Bought a Gucci sneakers, not the ones, ones with the sequins. I thought we was gangsters, what you doing? Running to the precinct. I got shit to prove, but not to you. You just wanna see shit. You don't wanna see me lit. You don't want me eat with niggas that I starve with. They put me out the deep end. Studio apartment, 114, no sleep-ins. Really putting work in. Now every day a weekend. Cut all my basics. I know they coming, I cover my bases. I know she know us from standing on couches at more than a couple of places. You don't wanna know us for running in houses and pointing these choppers in faces. Find you where you think you safest, just to find out about them plates. At DC, they about to fly out LA. You know I ball like a child to play. Almost ain't make it like Tyson Fury. The we was way stronger than Wilder, babe. Southside, I'm from the Southside. You probably can't name a wilder place. I hope you strap when you outside. Pray they don't come take your child away. Shit, my smile away. Been waiting for change, it feel like that shit is a while away. Sleep when I die, I'm wide awake. How you relate when I'm from a place where we die at a higher rate? And it's lower rewards at higher stakes. But it's business, my niggas, I need them. Can't leave them, like sinners. My pieces, they quarters, conceded. I'm winning and I asked you for help that I needed. Couldn't get it.